At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadda Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who would it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. Myself, Brian McConnell, found on Twitter at SideBMax. Sean Makes on Twitter at Sean A. Makes. No Cam Smith today. He is celebrating birthday festivities, I believe, is what we came to find out. I guess he doesn't have that dog in him. And
you worked
on your show on your birthday, Sean. I worked the day before my birthday. I don't think there's been a show on my actual birthday.
I also worked on my birthday, too.
See? Yeah. Cam just doesn't have that dog in him.
I'm not sure if I worked on my birthday.
You did.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, 100%. Because it's also my wife's birthday, so I remember, like, I am I going to get away with, like, actually doing the show today and then doing stuff any afterwards?
No, I thought I always took off that.
Maybe you did one year, but another year you worked on it, because this has spanned multiple birthdays for you, this show now.
Yeah, that
is true. Anyway. That is true. As you heard, Johnny Belmer is on the show as well. You can find him on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny.
It's so funny that you know my birthday more than I do.
It's because it's the same as
and
my
And I know
wife,
his so. Wife's birthday.
Yeah. Careful.
I am.
All right.
Actually, birthday just passed.
A little dangerously here. I'll obviously be... We'll obviously be following along with the big game on Fox right now, Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State just scored to go up 14-10, I believe.
Yes.
Pending the extra point. But obviously, that's the biggest game on the schedule today in college football. A few other games of note, and the Aggies play tonight here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So make sure you you listen to that while driving around. And we will get to college football in the 12:45 segment. Hour number two, we'll have Mount Rushmore plus one, and the hype train returns.
Whoop, whoop.
But we do got to talk about it. I kind of don't want to, because that was a 3-hour kick to the groin on Thursday.
The hype train's off the rails.
The hype train was, it was fully derailed. Chemical spill all over the road. There's going to have to be an environmental cleanup. I mean, it was...
EPA is involved.
People in hazmat suits are out there. Man, it was so bad. If you have thoughts on the Texans, give us a call. Give us a text. HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. So... I don't know where you want to start with this, Sean, but some of the gut reactions I had, and I think this is the biggest one, the most, or at least the longer term one, the one that has the, I guess, the most importance to the season as in full. But I went into the season like Sam went around our Twitter, our social media person. I almost said internet person, which made me sound 1,000 years old. Belmer's like, it's like, well, I mean, the shoe fits, wear
it,
buddy.
She does the snap face stuff.
Oh, God. All right. Yes, she does MySpace for us, I believe. But anyway, she recorded a video of all of us here at ESPN 97.5 giving our preseason predictions before the Texans season began. And I had them at 11 wins and making the AFC title game. Mm. And I'm shook. I mean look, it's not just that game. Obviously, you combine it with the embarrassment that was the Packers game, where you're +3 in the turnover margin and still lost. Obviously, the Vikings destroyed you in week 3 of the season. So you combine those two games with what happened on Thursday against the Jets, and I no longer believe in the upside that I thought they were capable of this year. Now, obviously, a lot of that is due to injury. Specifically, Nico Collins. Obviously, Aziz Alshires missed 2 games.
Now, Kenyon Green's injury.
That's an improvement. And the other part of that, which Kenyon Green's a part of, is the offensive line. Like, I think we all knew there were question marks. I mean, Kenyon Green was penciled in as a starter.
Yeah, Green
you
and
knew
Scruggs.
There was a question mark But none of us knew it was going to be this bad.
That's the thing. Where you go into a season with one, I would say two question marks, one huge one with Green. But on your offensive
Juice
line.
Juice obviously at center.
Yeah, and Juice is being the second one. But the other, you know, 60% of your offensive line you feel good about. You feel like they're people that you've invested a lot in, whether it's, you know, the two contract extensions now for Tunsil after the trade in 2019.
Yeah,
now,
he's had multiple. Shaq got a contract extension. Shaq, Tytus Howard got extended.
He traded for him. He got extended. Yeah. Tytus got extended. And so there's really – and then if you want to keep going, Scruggs was
a second-round
pick. Mm-hmm. Kenyon Green, obviously a first-round pick, a top 20 pick. So
passed over Kyle Hamilton.
Who dropped an interception, so it's a great
pick.
He's
a bum, yeah.
Good job, Kasaria. but you invest this much in your offensive line, and for it to be this bad, and for it to do you have it in the rundown here?
I don't
where,
think. You talking about pressure rate? No.
Yes. Okay, so the three highest pressure rate games of CJ Stroud's career. The last three games he has played.
Yes.
The last 3 weeks are the most pressured he's been all year. Even last year, where there were, or I guess this year, there's also offensive line injuries, but they might be helping. The offensive line injuries last year, even all last year, he was not as pressured as he's been the last three games. And that's the point to where that is the thing where I agree with you. If they do not fix that, they cannot. I mean, they can't win a playoff game. I don't know if they can.
I mean, no, 100%. Like, I mean, this is obviously the extreme.
I don't know if they can win the division. Honestly, I don't know if they can win the division.
See, that's kind of where it's tough to go.
It's a toss-up.
I don't even think it's a toss-up because it's tough to go for me to go. Because I want to just kill him right now. But the thing that holds me back is like, oh, they're still going to win the division. And like, how much can you kill a team that's. I do think, well, one.
They play the Lions next week.
I know, but you
they
still.
They have the Chiefs and Ravens at the end of the year.
Sure, you're sitting at six wins. You still have two games against the Titans plus a game against the Jags. I'm going to assume that gets you to nine wins plus you have the tiebreaker, so the Colts would have to get to 10. And I don't think they can get to 10, even with Flacco. Even with the better quarterback now starting. I don't think they can get to 10 wins.
We're penciling in a win against the Jags? A team that they needed a last
in that game on the road,
last touch drive to win.
We shouldn't fear the Jaguars on the road, but they kind of got lucky to beat the Jaguars the last time, and they played like ass on the road three times now.
And now the Texans are playing way worse. So that's where to me it's a toss up, just because when your offensive line's this bad in the NFL, in the National Football League, when your offensive line is this bad,
yes.
I don't think you can say, oh, pencil in a win against anybody, because
not even the Titans at home?
Because you have your quarterback running for his life. The Titans, the best part about their team is their defensive front.
Yeah, the defense, they gave up, what, 52 to the Lions last week?
The Texans aren't the Lions.
No, but they'll have Nico Collins back for that game. Okay. So whatever percentage you would say they are to the Lions, they got a little bit closer with Nico Texans. Collins. We think, knock on whatever this is made of, that Nico Collins returns next week.
And I fear we'll definitely see that the Texans aren't the Lions Sunday.
Dude, I mean...
A week from tomorrow, yeah.
They got a long week.
They got a long week.
A lot of... You know what? Mini-buy. They have the mini-buy week.
Oh, yes. We get the mini-buy talk this week.
They can make a trade Tuesday.
What is D'Amico Ryan's off the buy? Can we get that record? It's not a whole lot. Cause
it's
only
either
1-0
or 0-1. I think it might be 0-1.
Is it 0-1?
I think it might be 0-1. I'll double check that, but I think they lost off the bye last week.
Yeah, I don't remember their bye week. Oh, you know what? I think their bye might have been before the Carolina game last year.
That sounds right.
Obviously lost that game.
I remember Paul and I just crushed them for losing off the bye.
Good Lord. To Carolina. It was?
Yeah, it was to
confirmed?
Carolina.
That was obviously Carolina's first and one of two wins on the season?
That was half their wins. Yeah.
Johnny, I might need you to talk me off the ledge. We're way in on this because, I mean, obviously you've heard what Sean and I have had to say, but yeah. when I look at this team with the injuries, how inconsistent they are, the offensive line playing like ass, I'll mention injuries again because it's more than one. CJ Stroud, at least on the stat sheet and on the box score, taking a step back. I mean, he went what was it 11 for 20 something?
It was Anthony Richardson-esque.
I was going to make the Josh Allen week 5 comparison, yes. Who went, I believe, went 9 for 30 in that game. And CJ basically did the
11 for 30.
11 for 30.
191.
So, I mean, where are you at with the Texans right now?
Yeah, so I'm in a better place than you are, it sounds like. Yeah, back off the ledge, B-Mac. You know, I've seen a lot of people attacking CJ and kind of echoing what you said, but to a more of an extent that he's taken a big step back this year. And I just don't – I don't know what people are talking about. Like, if you can't stand there and throw the ball without being smashed every time you drop back, your production is obviously going to drop. But you still see those big-time throws. We've seen one in the last game. It didn't make a difference. We lost the game. But there was a big-time throw that CJ can still make them. I think if you protect them, you have a chance. Here's the other thing. The defense is still playing really well. You're going to get Nico back. You'll have Nico and Tank, and then you'll have a couple other receivers. Mixon is still playing great. I think if you scheme up the off, whatever you got to do to fix the offensive line, you fix it, you Witchcraft. Can still win some games. This is the season is not over, but you are correct. My faith in the ability for them to make a run in the playoffs has taken a huge hit.
And really, it is to me the offensive line. Because I agree with you that getting Collins back, getting some of the defensive pieces that were out,
and now you got to worry about Will Anderson going into next week.
You do have to worry.
He's had a history of ankle injuries. And I mean, there were people I heard after the game, like, well, he came back in. Well, so did Joe Mixon. Yeah. And he missed three games. So
yeah. I think that the offensive line is what is keeping them from being able to have
it's certainly at the very, very top of the list.
A reasonable offense, NFL offense. And that is why I also agree with John with the sophomore slump kind of narrative with the CJ Stroud being. Kind of, it is the opinion, to me, it is the opinion of someone who is not watching the game. It is someone who is just on Twitter, not actually, who didn't watch the game, that CJ Stroud's been running for his life the last, the last 3 weeks. It's been the most
really
pressure
all season.
He's been basically running from his life since he threw that touchdown pass to Nico Collins when Nico Collins tore his ACL. I mean, his
hamstring.
Yeah. That's basically the moment where everything went and flipped.
Yeah, that really is, because that's where it went from this offense, like, it's not perfect, it's clunky, it has its fits and starts, they cannot score in the second half, which has continued, but they cannot score in the second half, but they're still making plays, they still have enough. But then when you take that level, that dynamic playmaker off the field with Nico Collins, and then you take out Stephon Diggs later, that's where the Jenga Tower starts to get a little bit shakier, when it comes to this Texans offense.
You a big fan of like the super large Jenga thing at a bar?
No.
I don't either. I don't want to play the large version. I don't need the risk of a workplace accident while I'm playing bar games.
It's also, I don't know, Jenga's not that fun of a game.
It's not. It's pretty overrated. I played it before. I played it a few times. But, I mean, yeah. I'd rather, if we're talking about like old school games, I'd rather play Battleship than Jenga.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Have you seen the Battleship?
Hell no. How did they ever make a movie based on that? I mean,
that was awesome.
Well, not really a board game, but.
Well, not even a movie. But have you seen the giant version of Battleship?
There's a giant version?
Yeah, it's like beer pong, right? You set up the beer cups where you want them, and then you throw the ping pong ball over, and it lands in the cups to make the Battleship.
Oh, but there's something and obscuring then you your vision.
Yeah, there's something.
Where you, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looks fun.
Yeah, that does look fun. Can we get that for the...
Can we play that during the break?
For the studio? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's carry over some of this Texas conversation. You guys have brought up the idea, not that you were proposing it, but what people are talking about with the sophomore slump for CJ Stroud. Also wanted to get back into, Nico, offensive line issues, all the concerns we have right now with the Houston Texans. That one more when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into The Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, Johnny Bellmer. And we just had the upset of the weekend, John. Did you realize that we just had the upset of the decade, really? I was so surprised that I made a Blues Brothers reference, a movie from like the early 80s, and Sean knew what I was talking about right away. I was so surprised you got that.
Yeah, no, I know.
I made a mission, we're on a mission from God joke in reference to something we're not going to bring up. And Sean got it right away.
Yeah.
Did you get that reference, Johnny?
I'll be honest, I didn't hear it. Okay, I think I took you out of cue.
Johnny
didn't hear
it.
No, yeah, like, it was very close.
Johnny's like,
to the
I only listen to you when I'm paid to, which is on air, not during commercial not breaks.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, too.
not this babble that they got going, talking about
Damn
movies.
It, Johnny. That hurt. That one hurt a little bit. I set you up, and you just went along with it. All right. Gonna move on from that one. That one stung.
Dust myself off, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Dust myself off. Just a little, anyway. Okay, back to the Texans. Something else that stung on Thursday. So you guys brought up what people have been talking about really for the last few weeks, especially after Thursday's game. And really, it was a preseason talking point that I didn't understand. The idea of a sophomore slump from C.J. Stroud. And I'm glad to hear you both say that that you don't believe in it. I think, Sean, you basically said it was a symptom of someone who hasn't watched the games.
Yeah.
Because there are moments... Like, I mean, there was in the last game that the Texans won against the Colts 2 weeks ago, there were some throws where, I mean, Stroud's going to miss some throws, but every quarterback misses throws, right? I think people will look at there was an out route to Dalton Schultz in last week's game. There was a pass over the middle to Stephon Diggs that would have completed a pass or converted a third down, but the pass was behind. He dropped it and allowed the defender to get into the play. And then this week we saw multiple times where he missed John Metchie once in the end zone for what would have been a touchdown. Another play where Metchie was running a crossing route and Stroud left a little too high and long. Metchie couldn't reach it.
Yeah.
So there people are going to these talking head shows are going to put up super clips of moments like that. It's like, Stroud's taking a step back. Which, look, were those good throws? No. They were bad throws that he should have made. But every quarterback in the league is going to have, you know, two or three throws a game where he misses. I mean, that's not something that I would be all that concerned about. And you can't separate from that his offensive line issue.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Sean in the first segment. The three highest pressured games that he's had in his entire career have been the last three games. Like, even when C.J. Stroud, and this is kind of the long-term damage that you maybe have to worry about. Hopefully we don't. Hopefully Nico fixes everything and they make a trade for an offensive lineman. But you have to worry about kind of what Sam Darnold went through, where you start seeing ghosts. Not in ghosts in terms of defenders, but kind of like the David Carr battered quarterback thing, where like even when you have a clean pocket, you're like, oh wait, am I sure I'm safe? And you're not setting yourself up with your mechanics and your delivery the way you should. And passes that would have been routine before suddenly become an adventure, and maybe a few of those don't get completed.
Yeah, and with CJ, I'm not there yet where I'm worried about like him long term getting David Carr. But I do think in the short term, that is what's leading to some of the inaccuracy, is that just psychologically, when you're getting pressured literally over half of your dropbacks, and then
3 weeks in a row.
Yeah. And then when you aren't getting pressured, in the back of your mind, you think, oh my God,
am I getting pressured? Is there somebody behind me? Because he's been blindsided a couple times.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get smoked every time. So I do think there's a little bit of that. And I agree. I don't think C.J. Stroud played a good game to the C.J. Stroud standard that
obviously
we have
11
for him.
For 30, you can't say he played well.
Yeah, and those missed throws do count. But I think that the core of all these issues is the fact that they can't block anybody.
Yeah, so I think the idea of a sophomore slump is stupid. Like, if right now... I mean, if you switch places with him and Jared Goff, who they're facing this next week, Goff gets to stand behind probably the best offensive line in football. You switch places with them.
And with the best offensive coordinator in football versus Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, well, certainly Bobby Slowick isn't the best offensive coordinator, and that's another limiting factor right now, honestly. But if you switch places with them, I mean, weapons when fully healthy for the Texans are fairly equal to the Lions. I mean, C.J. Stroud's going to shred him, Stroud. Ooh. But I mean, I just like I don't buy into he's taking a step back. Like he's getting killed damn near every game.
Yeah.
If CJ Stroud's if they've able to fix their offensive line issues, which is mostly fixing left guard, you hate to say that bad of offensive line play is one position, but we saw some of the plays that Quinnen Williams had on Kenyon Green. I mean, there was a moment in that game. I don't remember if it was the strip sack or if it was another play where Quinnen Williams got in. But there was a moment when watching that game where Kenyon Green was so bad that I just, like, he can never play for the Texans again. Like, I mean, he's hurt. He's not going to play for them for a while. But to me, if you're D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio looking at that tape, like, we saw it happen in the Colts game as well, where he got bullied, got taken out, but then he had to come back in because Jarrett Patterson got hurt and got concussed. But Kenyon Green should never play for the Houston Texans again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, with the season-ending injury, it makes it more likely that
and I would
happen.
Say that, you know, season-ending injury. I mean, to me, is there any difference between what Kenyon Green has done this year and to what the Astros cut Jose Abreu for? They're unplayable.
Yeah, yeah, they both are.
Except for at least Jose Abreu has a back of the baseball card to point to. Kenyon Green's got nothing.
Yeah, and some of the Green stuff, it's tough because he's a guy who who's gotten hurt. I mean, he missed all of last year before this. So there's some level of, like, stunted development with him, but it's just so bad in your team that has such high expectations that you can't really afford to keep running him out there. And honestly, the decision getting taken out of D'Amico's hands was probably for the best, because it felt like they're going to just keep trotting him out there.
I mean, he did bench him, though, the week before, but then had to put him back in because of the Patterson concussion.
But on Thursday, you could tell from the first drive that this was not going to happen.
Oh, man, he was getting abused. And, he might as well not have been standing there.
Yeah, and
on a few of those plays.
And Kendrick Green, I mean, it's not exactly like he was Larry Allen when he came in, but but at least it was just something different.
Serviceable.
Yeah, okay. I'll give him serviceable.
More than Kenyon Green.
Yeah, exactly. But that to me means, when we're talking about this, it means they need to make a trade for a guard.
Well, let's go there. I mean, yeah,
I know you're not going to get an all pro.
You're not getting Larry Allen, like you mentioned.
No.
I mean, obviously
not Steve Hutchinson.
Not
either.
Even Steve Hutchinson. Kevin Mawai is not walking through that door.
Definitely. Or if he is, it's as a coach.
Yeah. Logan Mankins not walking through that door. Right, are we good? Are we done?
We're good on guard.
Olin Krutz not walking. I mean, he was a center. But anyway, so let's talk about that, because
Chester Pitts.
Hey, Texans OG.
He is
walking through that door because he's a Texans
He's
ambassador.
Wearing a red blazer.
He's one of the first draft picks in team history. NRG Stadium was built on the back of Chester Pitts, damn it. I mean, not literally, but I'm going to go with it. Chester Pitts is a legend.
He is an actual Texans legend.
He's an actual Texans legend, Texans ambassador. But let's talk about it, because I think, obviously, you and I in agreement. John, tell me if you're different, but I assume you'll agree as well that interior offensive line, left guard is your number one need. The Texans, I mean, we don't have the drop for this, but to reference Breaking Bad, they're not a serious team if they don't make a move for left guard. I cannot take them seriously if they don't address left guard. But that's not the only need they have, so I'm curious where you guys fall in these other places. I mean, I guess the debate is, does Nico Collins fix everything? But there's, to me, an issue with wide receiver depth. And you also got to talk about slot corner, because as much as Jalen Petrie has played well in the box against the run, I mean, we saw what happened on the downs play. We saw what happened multiple times in the game on Thursday. I'm trying to remember who burned him over. Was it Devontae Adams that burned him deep over the top?
Both Adams and Wilson.
But they both got him. Yeah. So, I mean, he can't cover man coverage down the field. Like, you put him in the slot, someone runs a crosser against him, he will not hold up. He cannot do it. So, slot corner and wide receiver depth, to me, aren't as important interior offensive line, but to me, they're also, like, if they fix interior offensive line, suddenly we're going to be looking at those, you know, slot corner wide receiver depth. Like, man, they really got to fix that. That's now the glaring weakness on this team. So, where do you guys fall with how aggressive you'd be on going after the interior offensive line, and where you fall in the problems with wide receiver depth and slot corner?
I mean, you need to make a move for an offensive lineman. I mean, obviously, there is an element of, you're not going to get someone awesome, but you just need a person to add to this this group that you have. And whether he is someone who is just insurance, and what you're going to do is you're going to put in Patterson at left guard when he gets healthy and have Scruggs, or maybe you flip Scruggs and Patterson, or you...
Scruggs didn't play... I didn't think he played all that well at guard last year.
Yeah, that's more of getting Patterson to center if you think that Scruggs calling out the protections is the problem.
That is something they're never going to tell us, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was something that came up in the offseason where CJ talked about wanting to be more involved in that, calling his own protections, obviously implying that he didn't a lot as a rookie. I'm not sure where that's at this year. If Juice is Juice calling it, because either way, if CJ's calling it or Juice is calling it, they're calling it for the first time in the NFL.
I think it's Scruggs, but I could be wrong. Obviously, I'm not there. I don't know
sure
what they're doing, but I believe just through talking to DJ, who is there, and what other people that are around there say, I think it is, and what CJ has said, I think it's mostly on Scruggs.
See, that might be something. Obviously, they have to fix left guard regardless, but that could be the extra piece of this that makes a big difference. And because what we've seen even before the last 3 weeks where they just got obliterated, and thanks in large part to Kenyon Green's play, they had the communication issues throughout the season, going all the way back to week one. The Colts did it in week one with the twists and stunts and the team not picking it up. And that obviously would come to or boil down to who's calling out the protections, who's giving out the responsibilities. So if whoever it is, if it's CJ or if it's Scruggs, maybe flipping it to the other guy might be a part of the answer in addition to making a move for a left guard.
Yes, yeah, and just like the nuts and bolts of it of, well, you had your starting left guard, Kenny Green, is out for the year, and your backup isn't much better than him. So that alone is you need to add somebody to this group just to make up for the loss that you took there. And it's a situation where the guy you pick up, even if I'm saying he's probably not going to be that good, he might be the best guy on your team the second you trade for him play that position.
Going back to the Jose Abreu comparison, I mean, John Singleton wasn't good by like normal offensive metrics.
But he was an average.
But, right. compared to what he was replacing, he might as well have been Babe Ruth because it was such a large a jump from like literally the worst first baseman in baseball to decent.
Yeah.
Same thing could be said for literally the worst left guard in football to decent. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at here. So anyway, we got more Texans conversation on the other side. I do want to get one text. And if you want to join in on the conversation, either through phone or text, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. This from 6856. Funny how Kenyon Green got hurt by his own quarterback. LOL. Instant karma for being trash. I did kind of find that funny. Like all season, Kenyon Green's been getting CJ hit, and when Kenyon finally gets knocked out and has a season in it, it's from his quarterback landing on him.
Listen, I feel bad. I feel bad for Kenyon Green.
Sure, we don't root for injuries
of season-ending injuries,
but
there is some dramatic irony. To it. There is some irony.
There is.
Do you think when, you know how quarterbacks buy their O-line gifts? Do you think when CJ buys everybody gifts, it's just like, he buys the fake version for Kenyon?
Oh, he gets everyone Rolexes.
Yeah.
But Kenyon gets the fake one?
Exactly.
I hope CJ does that. If you have an idea for what CJ Stroud should buy Kenyon Green as his gift this year, send us
everyone gets Fendi bags. He gets a Bendy bag. Yeah.
Send us a text at 713-780-3776 with your ideas for what CJ can get Kenyon Green. All right, more Texans conversation on the other side of the break. We want to get into Nico Collins possibly getting back this week, the workload on Joe Mixon, how concerned are you about that? And we got to talk about Bobby Slowik in the second half dry spells for the Houston Texans offense. That and more on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, John Belmer with you. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Sean is at Sean A. Mapes, and Johnny is on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. And if you want to join in the conversation like our texter from the last segment, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So getting back in to a few more of my gut reactions from the Texans' embarrassing loss to the Jets on Thursday.
You didn't have a chance to let them out yesterday.
Yeah. This is all bottled up. You're right. I was filling in for Michael Carroll, who, I mean, just doesn't do his job anymore. It's really a sad state of affairs. The guy barely works. So I was doing his job. Hell, on Thursday, I did my job and his job. And I don't know. Look, I can't speak for the work ethic of Michael Carroll. I'm just saying it's terrible. That's all I'm going to say. I won't say it's bad. I'm just saying it's awful. It's the worst I've seen. Anyway, a few more of these gut reactions to Texans Jets. Nico Collins, we think, it seems like all reports seem to indicate that he'll be back this week for the Sunday Night Football game against the Lions, which might be difficult to watch, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, we saw this last year. Obviously, Tank missed, I believe it was the last 10 games of the year. Yep. No, I'm sorry, last six games of the year. He played 11, missed the last six. Nico Collins missed two games last year as well. We saw that when any one of those guys went out, specifically Nico, that the Texans just could not move the ball. They didn't have the wide receiver depth to make things happen without one of the two guys in there, more specifically with Nico. Look, Mechie was open a couple times. CJ overthrew him, but we still really haven't seen anything from Mechie. Xavier Hutchinson was completely invisible, and Robert Woods had like one play in the Jets game. I do not think the Texans have the wide receiver depth to withstand any additional injuries now with Stephon Diggs out for the year. But do you think Nico kind of to some degree fixes all when he comes back? Because we saw him, like, the Texans had offensive line issues this whole year. We mentioned the Colts as early as week one getting to CJ with the twists and stunts, but CJ would find a way to scramble out and find Nico, and it was kind of like the magic eraser to all the problems they were having. Is it that simple, or do you think there might be a need to add a wide receiver in replacement of Diggs in addition to the offensive line help?
I don't think that Nico Collins is going to be the key that changes everything, where this turns into a awesome offense once he comes back. He'll definitely help just because of what you said of it's an extra target for CJ on the scramble drill, and that's something that's been very effective.
I think he's been the best guy on the scramble drill,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and so that is something where, again, that's going to help. But you can't build your entire offense off that. And you kind of need...
They kind of were, though. He was way, way out in front as far as leading the league in receiving yards. He was already over 500 yards through, what, five games?
Yes.
Not even a full five games, because he went out, what, second quarter against the Bills?
Yes. But even then, like you said, they were building the offense off of that. The offense wasn't, like, awesome.
No, it wasn't. It was 4-1 through those first five games.
Yeah, yes, but they also had Diggs there too, so they were fully healthy.
Like, I don't think you can, because I heard this conversation when Diggs was announced to be out for the year, and I see the phone caller we'll have after this point here, but we saw some of the conversation after Diggs got announced for being out for the year with the torn ACL. I was like, oh, you know, Hutchinson, Mechie. I don't know if this is the case with every fan base. It feels like it's a lot with the Texans, where there's a section of the fan base that just assumes everybody on the roster is good depth. And I think what we saw in the Jets game and what we saw last year is Mechie, Hutchinson, Woods are not good depth. They might be spots on the roster, but that doesn't mean they're not capable necessarily next man upping and stepping up into the spotlight.
Yes, I think those guys are good. They can be good wide receiver 3, 4, 5, but now you're asking to be 2, 3, 4.
Right.
And that is overstretching all those guys.
And you're asking Tank to be 1, which I don't think he's necessarily ready for that. Even though he did have, obviously by the stat page, a really good game against the Jets.
Yeah, so if you know, when you add in Nico Collins, that does bump them down a spot into where you're probably more comfortable with one of those guys being your third receiver, fourth, and then fifth. But even that is a one spot higher than they were coming into the season that you thought they were. So I can see the need to make a wide receiver trade.
I would.
But to me, it is a situation where first let's do the offensive line.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
They're
though.
Not. I'm just saying I am the offensive line is an absolute necessity. I think the wide receiver is a step down from that.
Sure. I mean, there's a name like Deontay Johnson went for, what, like a 5-6 swap, essentially?
Yes.
I mean, I think you could get...
If the price is that low, then...
Like, you could probably get Jacoby Myers from the Raiders for about that same price.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm... The reason I say it's not mutually exclusive is I think the offensive line help is going to cost you more than what I'm talking about, a wide receiver. Whether it be a Darius Slayton from the Giants or Jacoby Myers with the Raiders, it's going to cost you like a 6-round pick. So I think they need... Because you're kind of in the position where you were before the season started or before the offseason begins, like, man, You know, we have Tank, we have Nico, we love them, but if one of them goes one of those guys goes down, we're screwed. So let's add Diggs. You're kind of back in that same spot now. All right, let's go out to the HRMP listener line and hear from Jesse from Spring, who wants to talk about the Texans. Jesse, what's going on?
Hey guys, just a quick few observations. One, I think when Nico comes back, he's definitely going to help. But if the line is going to block like they are right now, I don't care if you have Jerry Rice and Andre Johnson out there. It's not going to help that much. You have to fix the offensive line. Yet Nico did really well the first, four or five games before he went out. But the line was not great, but they were better than they were the last two games. But as far as the other wide receivers, it's really hard to tell, I think, unless you're actually at the game and can see the whole field or you're looking at the all 22, because you really don't know if they're getting open or not. Whenever they have had the balls thrown to them, they've made the catches. Mechie has actually made a couple of really good catches. I don't recall him dropping any passes. So if the first four or five games, CJ was kind of taking a little while to get the ball out. And so I don't know if that's because they weren't getting open or he's just not reading the defense as well. I'm not sure. But and then just one last comment, CJ, I'm not an expert on quarterback play, but you never see him pointing things out at the line. So while we're blaming the center a lot, how much of that is CJ also needing to help them and point out different defenses and things like that. So thanks, guys.
All right, thank you for the call, Jesse. And if you want to join in like Jesse did, give us a call at 713-780-3776 for the HRMP listener line. And that's his last point there was kind of something you and I had already talked about, Sean. Like, I think he's right.
Yeah.
And that was kind of your guess as well, that CJ's not calling out the protections, but I wouldn't necessarily make that as a blame on CJ. It's more that the Texans haven't allowed him the opportunity. Like, if they're in their preparation, Juice is calling out the protections.
Yeah.
CJ then can't go to the line and just, overstep and change the protections that Juice just called.
Yeah, it's a situation where I think Jesse is right to point it out, but that is more of it's not CJ Stroud's responsibility at this point.
And I think maybe it should be.
And it should be.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're kind of going to the same place, but
Just kind of adjacent to each other. The point about Mechie, Hutchinson, and Woods, I do agree that they do have some talent out there.
CJ missed Mechie twice.
He didn't. He did
Jets game.
He did miss Mechie, and I was gonna say his numbers would look a lot better,
but it'd still be two catches.
Also John Mechie had zero catches for 0 yards. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, everything looks better than
But Hutchinson and Mechie combining for 0 catches and 0 yards, like that. I understand the two misses. I understand that's just you can't have that when you only have two. That means you only have two viable receivers, and one of them's Robert Woods in 2024. Robert Woods had 2 catches for 44 yards.
Yeah,
so
he had one really good catch. I remember.
Yeah, on the sideline.
And they the broadcast made a big deal about it, and that was basically all he did.
Yeah, so they really only had Dell out there catching passes. Effectively on Thursday, so you got to get better, and whether it's those guys stepping up or just having someone step up for them, being Jacoby Myers, Darius Slayton, whoever that is, that is something where having Nico Collins, having another guy in there will now kind of make this point kind of moot, because whatever you're getting from your fourth receiver, you're kind of happy with.
Yeah, and quickly following up on some of those points from Jesse before we go to the break. I mean, you mentioned there and Jesse mentioned the idea, like, well, unless you're there at the game or you see the all 22, it's hard to tell. Are Mechie and Hutch not getting open?
Yeah.
Or are they getting open and just not getting the ball? And certainly we saw, obviously, CJ miss Mechie a couple of times. So that would be a point.
It was his only two targets.
Right. So that could be a point or a point in that favor. But as you kind of laid out there when you mentioned he only got two targets, even without seeing the all 22, which, I mean, I've seen them a few times. I'm not watching the all 22 for every game. But, I mean, Hutch and Mech have played with CJ now for, a year and a half, right? If Mechie and Hutchie were actually getting open consistently, and you were going to say, well, the blame's on CJ because they're getting open. I'm watching the all 22. They're getting open. They're just not getting the ball. I mean, unless we think CJ is trash, if they were getting open consistently, they'd have some production.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even without watching the All-22, just realistically and logically to me, if they were getting open consistently and you have a good quarterback, the quarterback's going to find them. I know he's going to hyper-focus on Nico and Tank and Diggs. So maybe this is more of a conversation for last year for those two guys, but they were getting open consistently. Yeah. They would have a few catches. And Hutch is actually, I think I have more faith in.
Yes.
He had a really good diving catch. I guess it was a week ago against the Colts. To me, he's got more upside than Mechie. But again, if they were getting open consistently, I think they would have some production on the side.
Yeah. I agree that somewhere along the line that they would have, there would be the John Mechie game. There would be right. the Xavier Hutchinson game. And last year, we had two Noah Brown games. We had
exactly. Yeah, because he was getting open. That's kind of the point I'm making. Like, Noah Brown is not a world beater at wide receiver. He's been kind of a journeyman now, I think, on his third team. But when he got open, CJ found him.
Yeah.
I mean, so these guys were getting open, they get the ball. And one other quick point, real quick, before we get to break. I could feel Johnny staring daggers at me. He wants me to get a break. He was about to jump at me. He was like, break, break, Brian. That's what John sounds like in my head. Break. But I do look to the first point Jesse made, kind of the conversation about does Nico fix all when he returns. Of course, he doesn't fix all, but I will say, and this point is a little less powerful considering the Colts and other teams got pressure just rushing four quite a bit. But I do think when Nico returns, who was by far and away not only this team's best deep threat, but maybe outside of Tyreek, maybe the best deep threat in the league, I think you Texans would see less pressure because teams are going to commit more on the backside to stay deep and prevent Nico from going long. So.
Yeah.
Now, will it prove the offensive line from a point of where it's been to great? No. You're going to need to add an offensive lineman at left guard to get it to that point. But I do think it at least marginally gets better because teams aren't going to be as willing to blitz if they're also having to commit people deep to stopping Nico.
Yep.
All right, when we get back on the other side of the break, let's talk some college football. What's going on with the Longhorns? They're on the bye week. Obviously the Georgia game didn't go well for the Longhorns, and Vanderbilt went down to the wire. So any concerns there? And can the Aggies ever actually go back to Connor Wiegman, or are they going to go with Marcel Reese for the rest of the year? Let's talk about that and more on the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back to the Bullpen, and you know what you can do? You can join us on November 11th from 6 to 9 p.m. for The Tailgate, presented by Verizon. The Tailgate's a celebration of Houston sports and the fans that cheer them on. Hey, that's you. You'll savor, sports-inspired bites from top Houston restaurants.
What?
Including Big City Wings, Loro, Pizarro's Pizza, Uchi. I've been to Uchi. Uchi's good. And many, many more. Plus, sip on premium cocktails, bid on memorabilia, enjoy plenty of game day fun. Upgrade to VIP to meet and greet with Texans legends Brian Cushing and Travis Johnson. Those are two, not just Texans legends, but of all the Texans legends you would want to meet and greet, those are up
those
there.
Are two guys that have like a little ZFG in them.
Yes.
That would tell you some things,
yes.
I think.
That's, of course, courtesy of Verizon. Tickets will include all food and drink. Get yours now at tailgate.culturemap.com. Use promo code ESPN for $10 off any ticket type.
All right. So as teased, we're going to talk some college football. And if you have any thoughts on the Aggies or the Longhorns, give us a call or text at 713-780-3776. That's how you can join in the conversation on the HRMP listener line. So A&M, to Sean, as much as we can find out looked again during the break,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like they made an official announcement to who they'll start at quarterback at South Carolina tonight. Will it be Connor Wiegman or will it be Marcel Reese? I don't see how they go back to Connor at this point. I really don't. Like, I mean, I get that he was, the number one rated pocket passer in his class. He obviously comes into A&M with a lot of pedigree. But we've seen now, other than when he's been a surprise, hello, Mizzou, other than when he's been a surprise, he's just not that effective. And really, you can actually make the same case for Marshall Reese, because I went back and kind of looked like when these guys have been a surprise to the opponent versus when they're planning for it. And it's like, obviously, Wigman, we all knew he was going to start week one against Notre Dame. He was a disaster. Then, excuse me.
Yeah, then was it?
Marcel, he got hurt. Wigman got hurt in the second game. Marcel Reese then came in. And
against Florida.
Against Florida. He did pretty decently against Florida. But when Arkansas knew it was Marcel Reed, they didn't cover at home. They won by four. The spread was six. And Reed passed just for 11 for 22. So terrible as a passer. Mizzou didn't know. Obviously, Connor Wigman went off, and the Aggies, who were just 2.5-point favorites, won by 31. Mississippi State knew it was Wigman. Mississippi State is a terrible team. Aggies were 21-point favorites, didn't cover, only won by 10. And Wigman threw two picks and wasn't efficient passing the ball. Then, obviously, LSU knew it was Wigman, and he was terrible to start the game. He was 6 for 18, under 4 yards per attempt. And then, obviously, they made the switch. LSU didn't know Marcel Reed was coming in the game, and they acted like they'd never seen the zone read before. And Marcel Reed went crazy, looked like a Heisman candidate. Every time one of these quarterbacks has had success is when the opponent didn't know who it was. And when the other team has planned for them, they've been a complete disaster. So it's weird to juxtapose those two positions, that Marcel Reed should be the guy because he's clearly had more effective stretches. But you also see from their opponents and their schedule this year, when every teams have known, like Bowling Green, we were watching that game at LaBerge. Marcel Reed was good against Bowling Green when Bowling Green knew he was coming. I don't necessarily think this fixes the inconsistencies for the Aggies, but I don't know. I don't see how you go back to Connor this year unless Reed just completely falls apart.
Yeah. It's tough, especially the shot of where it looked like Connor Wegman was learning that he wasn't going to be the starter anymore, and he didn't look thrilled about it. I'll say I agree with you. I think that Marcel Reed comes in and he runs
Colin Klein's system.
Yeah, he runs the system. He's a better system fit, I'd say, for they can do more stuff with Reed. But I do agree that I don't think that it's so definitive that you can't go back to Wegman. Honestly, like I honestly think that they should just keep flipping back and forth as long as it keeps working. If it keeps working, just do it. Because
announce the starter.
Yeah, and again, it's not like these guys are awesome when they aren't surprises. I mean, you went through their whole...
Yeah, they haven't been.
You went through the whole schedule.
Other than the Florida game, where Florida knew it was going to be Marcel Reed, and Marcel Reed was still good. Other than the Florida game, anytime the opponent knew who it was, they were terrible.
Yeah, they've had three good quarterbacking games. And
they're all surprises.
Two of them were complete surprises. The other one was still his first start, but it was a surprise.
Yes,
so
exactly.
That's where I don't really know what the fix is other than roll with Reed. And if you play either a tight one with South Carolina or you lose or it's a tight one and then you're down 10 to Auburn or something,
right,
then you make the switch there. Like, just keep switching it. I don't know if there's anything more that you can do other than, Reed's the hot hand right now, and you just ride the hot hand.
If I had to guess, they'll play Reed tonight against South Carolina. South Carolina doesn't have a great defense, so I expect that to go fairly decently for Reed. But and I agree with what you're saying. I think there's even saying that, like, Reed's the starter, Reed will play well tonight, I still think there's a decent chance that when Texas rolls into College Station, they're going to see Connor Wigman lining up as the starter.
Yeah, or at least you'll see both.
You might see both.
Maybe that's the...
Do you just play two quarterbacks from in-game, like situationally?
Maybe situationally you do that.
Although that kind of makes you predictable, too.
Yeah, it's not.
Because like when Wigman's out there, you know they're not running zone read with him.
Yes, and Marcel Reed in the comeback against LSU threw, I believe, two passes.
Two passes. He had two passes for like an entire half.
Yes, so it is the tendencies will tell you which one's which, but they also are both quarterbacks, so you can flip the tendency a little bit, or at least enough to keep the defenses honest. But, I mean, with the remaining schedule, I'm not sure how much it matters, really.
No, the only tough game left is the Longhorns in, 3 weeks from now?
Yes. It's South Carolina this week. I think they have a...
They have a nobody school. Here, I'll pull it up.
They have an FCS, I believe.
Because I remember looking ahead to their schedule a few weeks ago, And the only tough, like the only two tough remaining games on the schedule.
It's South Carolina, Auburn, Texas, and then FCS.
New Mexico State.
Not FCS, but.
Okay. Yeah, so out South Carolina, they got a week off after that, home for New Mexico State, at Auburn, home for Texas.
Yeah.
They should go.
Yeah, it should matter who your quarterback is for the next three games.
I mean, it should be 10-1 versus 10-1 when the Longhorns go to College Station.
Yes.
And let's switch over to the Longhorns because, obviously, and I said this after the Georgia loss, I thought Georgia was the only team that could do that to Texas. Because when you look at what happened in that game, it's easy to like, oh, 30 points. They gave up 30 points. Maybe the Longhorns' defense was also slipping. But when you look at the game, the box score in that, even if you didn't watch the game like you and I did, Georgia only had one scoring drive that was over 40 yards. Everything was super short, 30 yards and under, because they kept the Longhorns' offense kept turning the ball over. So I felt pretty confident that Georgia, with that defensive front, was the only team in the nation that, or at least on the remaining schedule, that could do that to the Longhorns. And then Vanderbilt kind of did it too. And that's the concern right now, because this offensive line, whether it be with Banks, who's projected as a top 10 pick, maybe the first left tackle taken, you got multiple guys in the interior of the offensive line, like Majors, who have like 30 plus starts. The offensive line was supposed to be a major, major strength of this team, and it looked like it early, but same thing with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt only lost by, it was a four-point game, right?
Three.
And the same thing that happened against Georgia. Their first three scoring drives of that game were all like 20, 30 yards and in, because Quinn Ewers had two passes tipped at the line that turned into interceptions and short fields for Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're probably not worried about against Kentucky. I'm trying to remember who else is before A&M.
They play Florida.
Florida, Kentucky, and then A&M, right. I'm probably not worried about against Florida either. Not worried about against Kentucky, especially since is that game at home? No, they're at Kentucky, home Florida, right?
No, Kentucky's at home.
Kentucky is at home? Okay. Either way, I'm not really worried about against Florida, Kentucky. Probably am worried about it on the road against A&M. But how big of a problem do you think this Longhorns offensive line is right now? Which we thought was going to be a massive strength.
I think it's a problem, but it's not. I mean, to go back to what we've been talking about for the first 45 minutes of the show, it's not Texans level where
certainly not.
You can't do anything. It is an issue, but to me some of it is just like the tip passes at the line from against Vanderbilt. That's just like, hey, that's just gonna happen when you're throwing as many screen passes as you are, and you're inviting the rush a little bit so to set up the screen. And I don't know if it's something with like Quinn Ewers' arm angle or something, but that is less of a like things need to change. That is just a poor game script and a little bit of, wow, Vandy is really the team that just kind of has a horseshoe for the rest of
the entire season. Thought Vandy was going to win that game because, yeah, again, their only time they scored was when they only had to go like 25, 30 yards. Yes. Like they weren't able, their offense was awful. The Longhorns defense held them completely in check when they had to go more than 20 or 30 yards for a score. But even in saying I never thought Vanderbilt was going to win, they were an onside kick away from maybe having a chance.
Yeah.
And it was all because of those turnovers, which we saw in a different way, but it was the same thing against Georgia where
Those were on the quarterbacks, because Arch also fumbled. But
yeah, Arch also fumbled. But Carson Beck was not good against Texas in all but one of those scores. Like the only scoring drive Georgia had that went more than like 35 yards was that second half, I believe fourth quarter drive, where they went like 80 yards. Mm-hmm. But everything else was like 30 yards, 35 yards, 20 yards. One was like a one play from the two, if I remember correctly, in that game. So I'm not worried at all about the Longhorns defense. You know, we'll see with Quinn. He's very up and down. I don't think they're going back to Arch at all this season. But the offensive line is enough to give me just a little bit of a side eye. I don't think it's a problem against Florida. I don't think it's a problem against Kentucky. Going to College Station, obviously they have a great defensive front. I'm a little bit worried about that. And now I still think the Longhorns could get in with two losses if they take care of business against Florida and Kentucky.
They also have at Arkansas.
Oh, that's right. I don't love that. We'll put that aside for now. But if they go into A&M 10-1 and lose that game and end up 10-2, I still think they end up in the playoff. But I'm a little worried about the offensive line, what we've seen against the better pass rushers.
Yeah, yeah. Now I think A&M is definitely a bit better.
You're a bad person, John Belmer. You're a bad person.
Wait, what?
Sorry, Sean. I played the Texas.
He played
back
the Texas is back thing.
Oh, okay.
He played Joe Tessitore.
I didn't have the.
He didn't have it. John, you know, this is John's way of getting me out to break because he knows he's going to disrupt while we're. All right, fine, John. We'll go to break. On the other side of the break, it's time for the Hype Train. ESPN Radio 97.5,
92.5. ESPN 97.5.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.